This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Coming up on today's show, a look at plans for a bike trail that would connect Cincinnati's neighborhoods. But first, the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center last November hosted Manhood to Brotherhood. It was an intergenerational discussion on the ideals of manhood and brotherhood from an authentic African-American male perspective. And this Thursday, the Freedom Center will present the Kin Killin' Kin Solution Symposium to discuss ways to reduce violence and homicide. Joining us to explore the challenges faced by young African-American men in America are Avondale Comprehensive Development Corporation Executive Director and President of Ozzie Davis & Associates, Ozzie Davis III, Director of the United Way of Greater Cincinnati Middletown Area, Terrence Shear, Sr., and the Manager of Program Initiatives at the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center, Chris Miller. And you can be part of the discussion at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Ozzie, Terry, and Chris, thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you.
Young black men, they're a lot more likely to face joblessness. I think it's like twice the rate of their white peers, the homicide rate, a lot more likely to face violence, incarceration in their lives. You know, when the Freedom Center held the Manhood to Brotherhood discussion, what were the big reasons that were driving holding that conference, and what were you hoping would come out of it?
What we were hoping to engage in an intergenerational conversation to where older men were talking with young men as far as ideas when it comes to manhood and brotherhood. But one of the things outcomes is we did focus on childhood. Before you can venture into manhood, you have your childhood and how you are developed. And so we explored those challenges. And as we see, as far as with children, one of the stimulus for the conversation is the Kin Killin' Kin exhibit. One thing I will mention that's in that exhibit is where James Pate captures a young person who is jumping rope. But when you look closer at the face appears to be much older than a child. It doesn't appear to be a child's face. And his interpretation is that children are forced to grow up faster than they need to. Therefore, their childhood, that development is hampered in that way. And so we definitely had several discussions about childhood and the development.
Ozzie, you know, how important was it for this whole discussion to be intergenerational?
Well, the problem is intergenerational. So this, I believe the discussion has to include not only the youth, but as you grow into manhood. And that's the significance in brotherhood. And some of the lapses that we have in the community today are disconnect in brotherhood that's caused by the bad or the inappropriate style of growth from boyhood to manhood. And what do youth see? What do youth model? And I think in James's art, you can see the pain in that disconnect. Because if you're a young boy and you never get to see success, how are you to become successful? And that pain is so evident in the work that we see in the KKK exhibit.
Yeah. It's interesting, too, that Kin Killin' Kin, KKK, a lot of the young men are depicted either wearing a KKK hood or with the initials KKK on them. Now, tell me some more about the significance of that as part of the Kin Killin' Kin exhibit.
Well, from James Pate, this artwork is a rant, as he self describes it. And it's out of that rant, there's a frustration, when you see stories, when you see children, when you see senseless violence taking place, in various communities across this nation. And so he wanted to shed light not only on what's going on, but also the historical counterparts in that connection. And so with the exhibit, we explore and talk about the legacy and the culture of violence that is taking place in this country. And he identified, as far as in several conversations, of how in conversations in barbershops and beauty salons, to where people were saying, you know, we're putting the Klan out of business by killing each other. And so that drove him to use his artistic abilities to create this wonderful series.
Yeah, I totally agree with Chris. The work that what's going on in the communities right now is definitely what the work that the Klan did back in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. And I think making that connection and letting some of these young gentlemen understand, like Chris said, you're doing their work for them. You know, right now you're horrible for the community, just as the Klan was when my father was young. And I think it's good for the young people to see that connection, so hopefully it can sink into them to understand that they're causing devastation, not only for our generations now, but our generations in the future.
So, Terry, what kind of ideas came out of that conference that you saw as being very beneficial?
I think, number one, it comes back to education. And when I say education, I'm talking about in schools and also in households. We really need to go back and re-educate ourselves on our culture. We need to go back to history. That's why the Freedom Center is so important to this city. We need to start understanding what were the things that we did great before that we've forgotten in the last 20, 30 years. And we need to regroup. We need to make sure that school is going to be important for our young kids, especially our African-American males. We need to make sure that in every household we're doing everything we can do that when you come to our African-American males graduating, it's not a surprise, it's an expectation. And so therefore they can have a better and brighter vision for the future.
Yeah, you know, to Terry's point in regard to Terry and Chris's point in regard to the current status of African-American men and the Ku Klux Klan, you know, it's a depiction of hate. And it's clear that the KKK hated black people. And now the question is this self-hate something that we can remedy? And there were a lot of conversations in the Manhood Brotherhood panel around remedying that self-hate. And we have to have more love. We have to really dedicate ourselves to home, church, and school. That faith element is critical, particularly in our communities. And then if you can tie that home, church, and school together, I think a lot of the conversations we have about parenting, about community, what is a community? I mean, if it's not but for a accumulation of families, that's the, I think, what was really, for me, what was significant about the panel discussion. And yeah, I remember some things that Dr. Owens had said about family, and as he recanted about his own growth. It's a critical element. And if we don't look at how families structure and restructure themselves, we're going to be in a lot of trouble.
Ozzie, can you talk some more about the, Terrence mentioned education. Can you talk some more about some of the other common challenges that African-American males and their parents face, and some of the things that young black men are much more at risk of today than other peer groups?
Well, I think the greatest disparities, I mean, I think you hear of many of the health disparities, but there are many disparities in the access to wealth. And access to wealth is really creating a lot of the issues. A lot of times, if you don't have generational wealth in a family, then there are still kids that I know that are first time college attendees in 2016. Well, you're far behind in the accumulation of wealth, and that's a challenge mm-hmm. in the African American community. How to accumulate wealth. We're talking about that right now at the Avondale Youth Council. We're doing wealth building. In the first night of our wealth building 8-week course was to look back at Black Wall Street in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and they were absolutely shocked that there was, you know, businesses among businesses of African Americans dealing with each other.
Tell me a little bit more about it, because it's something I never heard about either.
Well, in the 20s, we had to depend and rely on ourselves. And in Tulsa, Oklahoma, they had a group of businesses, about 120 of them, and they really concentrated on dealing with one another. And built what they called Black Wall Street. And it's kind of the way
that we had to work anyway because you couldn't necessarily buy or deal with a majority business anyway. And some people say that it was integration that hurt African Americans the most, in that by being separate, it forced us to deal with one another. And the youth were just they were really fascinated by the ideal that black people would go to black businesses first. The conversations were around, I don't know if we would do that today. And if I wanted a pair of jeans, I'd probably go to the jeans store, not Mr. Johnson's store. And I think that's what we're trying to turn around. We're trying to get that dollar. I think there was there was some data about the dollar in Tulsa, Oklahoma in 1921, going around the community 1.5 times. And they say the dollar doesn't get around the African-American community today for 15 cents of a dollar. And that's,
It's some of this wealth building that you're talking, it's an awareness thing, isn't it? I mean, it's just teaching people things that they may not have heard before, right?
Yeah, I think it's tied to the self-hate. I think it's what Terrence said about going back in history and being able to know that you've had success, you're from a successful past, and your expectations. We expect an awful lot out of the people that are in our neighborhood. We expect greatness, and if you don't expect that, then you won't get it.
I think that self-hate actually comes out of a lack of knowledge about your identity. And I think as far as with black males, they struggle with that, how they identify themselves, but also how the public at large or the mainstream identifies them. I think
so. It's a perception problem.
I think it's internal and it's external as far as the perception problem. I guess a good example of that is, right now we're on the verge of the Super Bowl, and the comments by Cam Newton and how he looks at himself as far as being an African-American quarterback, and then some of the comments that were coming out of, that particular conversation, because he, viewed himself, or he views himself in a certain way, that he has high expectations for himself. He doesn't mind expressing those. And I think that is something that should be applauded in any young man. I would want to have those high expectations for themselves. But what happens is with the self-hate is that you view yourself as something less than. And when you have that type of value for yourself, you therefore transfer that value onto others, where you look at them as less than. And so if you identify and know how brilliant you are, you will also recognize the brilliance in others.
Which is something that's kind of difficult to achieve when you live in a city. Cincinnati is ranked third when you look at the poverty rate in the nation. That is third. There's an issue there. There's a total disconnect.
That always astounds me too, Terry, when I hear that.
It's a problem. And it's a problem that needs to be addressed. And this goes back to what Chris and Ozzy just said. If these young people feel like they don't have any opportunity whatsoever, and so therefore they're not going to want to go get that education, whether they feel devalued or whether they feel they don't have a chance. So why play a game that you know that you can't win no matter what you do? And that's what too many young people are feeling right now. And so we need to create another sense of value with them, and to let them know that you do have an opportunity by creating opportunities, going back, looking at the, Black Wall Street and things like that. I mean, I was aware of that. I'm lucky enough to have an 80-year-old father who educated me about Cincinnati and Kentucky. And he told me when he first came to Cincinnati, there were black-owned bars, and you had people, some of the biggest African-American stars would come to those venues. And so it was something simple. You was around black folks. You were entertained by black folks. It was a wonderful thing. And then as time changes, you can't go into a bar now and go see somebody special for $5. You're paying $100 to go see Beyonce. Well, when you have a lot of people who want to pay $100 to go see Beyonce that don't have money, they're going to do what they need to do to try to get this money. And so for a lot of them, the easy route is negative. So we need to change that frame of thinking. Earn it. Let's not burn this community down. Let's earn this community up.
We will continue our conversation. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Joining us to explore the challenges faced by young African-American men are Avondale Comprehensive Development Corporation Executive Director and President of Ozzie Davis & Associates, Ozzie Davis III, Director of the United Way of Greater Cincinnati Middletown Area, Terrence Shear Sr., and Manager of Program Initiatives at the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center, Chris Miller. Ozzie, we oftentimes hear about African-American parents. You hear this in the news, that they're trying to explain to their kids how to stay safe, how to deal with the police. Are those talks between parents and kids, are those kinds of things, are they taking place here in Cincinnati as well?
Oh, absolutely. Parents are more and more concerned about their children's safety, and not just in regard to their relationship with the police, but just period. I mean, even being out for play. We have a program in Avondale called Safe Play Day that was created by a doctor from Children's, who, that's what he heard from parents, that the kids were unsafe to go out to play. So he created a safe place for the kids to play. And, you know, in relationship to, you know, the police, there is a greater collaboration that I sense going on between the community and the police department. And I think it's particularly because of the high level of gun violence. And in my neighborhood, there were two very young children shot at 6 and 4 years old. You shouldn't have to deal with gun violence. And that makes a parent more, you know, aware, and it forces the parent to explain, educate their children around the need to be safe and the need to have a positive relationship with the police, and the need to be aware of your surroundings. And I see a lot more of that. And I see, as the mayor and the chief have been going around to different districts. They were just in District 3. I saw parents talk specifically about how they're discussing with their children the, you know, necessities around being very safe and cautious in regards to their movements.
Well, Cincinnati had one of the most violent years it's ever had last year. I think there were 479 shooting victims last year, Ozzie. What do you see as driving that?
Well, I think there are a number of things driving it. What I'm excited about is the police department's response to it. And Captain Harold and Chief Isaac's new place-based policing strategy. You know, crime is, violence is rampant, but there are only 23 places where 90% of the crime is being committed. And the pivot strategy is really about identifying and eradicating those 23 places. And I think this is going to be, I was in the Chief's Advisory Committee meeting yesterday, and Dr. John Eck was excited about it, which for me, a community guy, to have a trusted research scientist like Dr. Eck be excited about the police department's new strategy gives me a lot of excitement about where we're going to go as a community. And I'm not trying to look back at 15. I'm just trying to make sure that 16 is as safe as possible.
513-419-7100. If you'd like to join our conversation, let's talk with Dr. Daryl Brock. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I love the conversation. So hats off to all you guys for doing this and helping to get the word out. Secondly, I don't think it's so much just hate, self-hate, that we are facing. It is also no hope, leading to not caring, just not caring. So if you don't care about yourself, then you're certainly not going to care about the cat next to you or the guy driving down the street. Life means nothing. Next thing is in regards to the Black Wall Street, study it. It's just incredible, really, what was going on there. There's a lawyer by the name of Dr. Maggie Anderson who wrote a book in regards to black businesses. We have more than $1 billion going through the black community. The problem with that is that it's going through. It doesn't stay in. And if we figure out how to keep the money inside of the black community, we're making money. We're just not keeping it here. Every other community in the city keeps it there. The Korean community, they buy Korean. The Jewish community helps to buy Jewish, and on and on and on and on. So I don't want to start preaching, but
preach.
Love.
No, we got other callers we have to get to, Ozzy, but we. Dr. Brock, what you're saying, we want to comment on what you're saying there, so hang on just a second.
I will say the hope is paramount in enduring the struggle. From a historical standpoint, and when you study the history, you have a group of people who had that hope to see something or envision something that wasn't present. You know, when you talk about the Underground Railroad, talk about people who were enslaved, and those that have the vision to see freedom, although they never saw freedom from the time they were born. And so that hope is very paramount in any type of struggle. And I think, how do you give a person hope, when they don't, have that with them or they haven't, been exposed to it? I think you have to expose them to brilliant examples, so that, you know, right now we carry technology in our pocket or in our hand with our phone. I think we need to encourage young people, instead of looking at videos constantly on their phones, to actually commit one, at least one, learn something new or educational on your own, on your smartphone that you have there, at least once a week. You know, with my daughter, she's 14. Every week I've committed, I will give her quotes of inspiration every week that she can look on her phone, you know, and that's what I do as far as my obligation as a parent.
I will also say, and I say this many times before, you're 100% correct, Chris, and we talk about hope with young people, but we can't let the adults off the hook here. You know, we got to understand that the adults play a very important role in this. You know, the adults need to start creating hope. They need to start turning the TVs off, number one, and start talking to their kids. They need to start taking these young people to positive places. They need to go across the Ohio River. Get out of Cincinnati. The world is a big place. They need to start showing them all the great things that there is. We need to stop getting so caught up in the social media world. We need to turn off Scandal and How to Get Away with Murder and some other shows that people probably mad,
no,
but I don't care.
Can't turn off Scandal.
Not Scandal. Okay.
Ozzy likes Scandal.
All right. That's, you know, I can't say nothing, though. I can't even say that. I've been watching Has and Has Nots. So, but we really need to start understanding there's greatness in all people. So therefore, there is greatness in African Americans. I can tell you, I came from nothing. I came from no money whatsoever. The only reason I made it because I looked in the mirror every day and I told myself I'm somebody, no matter who told me I wasn't. And that's what we need to go back and create as a culture, not as individuals, because this is going to come down to relationships. We need to learn to build positive relationships.
Terry, how much do you think that the positive role models and mentoring would help?
You know, I think it would help a lot. And I do think a lot of people out here trying to do it, I would be the first to say it's not enough. We need more. We need more people. And a lot of times when we start talking about the young men, we think, okay, let's go get all the guys to be mentors. No, we need ladies too. We need to do this together. This is something that need to be done as a unified group. But I think it works. That's one reason, you know, I try to. My friends, we try to carry ourselves well. We try to, and we talk to young people. I don't let young people walk past me without speaking. I speak to everybody. I want them to know I care about them. I don't need to know your name. I don't care what label is on your clothes. I care about you. That's what we need to get back to.
513-419-7100 to join us, and let's talk with Sheila in College Hill. Hi, Sheila. Go right ahead. You're on.
Thank you. I had the privilege of working with Ozzy Davis some years ago when I was at Rockdale School. However, I have retired now. I am a veteran teacher of Cincinnati Public Schools, but I went on and I retired because I had a difficult time reaching students about the importance of their education. And my question really has to do with inclusion of true vocational education, things such as welding, automotive repair, diesel automotive repair. If you look at the Great Oaks School District, that's one of the options that other large school districts are taking advantage of, and Cincinnati Public does not. And I wondered if either one of your guests had had any conversations with the board or other policymakers with Cincinnati to try to include some of those types of educational opportunities. My reason for asking this is because students or people cannot build wealth if they don't have some sort of a skill,
some way to do
or
it.
Ability.
Yeah.
That people will pay for. And these are skills that some students would really embrace. I find in Cincinnati Public Schools there is a real bias. Anytime you speak of African-American children being educated and them taking advantage of vocational education. So I'll
Sheila,
take my
let's,
answer
Yeah, let's
here.
Let Chris wants to address this. So thanks, Sheila.
I think
that fits in the mold of the identity in creating different ways as far as to have your career or whatever your purpose is. I served as an academic coach at Holmes High School across the river in Covington for several years. And many of my students were in a vocational program that was there as far as, you know, those individuals that had aspirations of becoming mechanics, of becoming, you know, plumbers, electricians, and things of that nature. I do agree with the caller that I don't believe our students are exposed enough to those opportunities. You know, having someone who is a electrician to come and speak in a school, someone who is a plumber, because those are vocations that are needed. And it can become quite lucrative as well. And so it's the options. And I think, it's presenting options for young people, because college, we understand it may not be for everyone. But everyone has a purpose and everyone, has a skill that they can gravitate to make a living.
513-419-7100 to join us. Let's talk with Bob in Kenwood. Hi, Bob.
Hey, good afternoon. My question is that I do some volunteer work at 2020, and of course the young black kids are already in trouble. By their standards, I'm old, I'm white, and I'm wealthy. What can I do to help say that we care about them? What can we do to tell them how to help themselves get out of their situation?
You got to tell them the truth, Bob. You got to be 100% truthful with kids. You can't beat around the bush.
Give some examples there, Ozzy.
If a young man has committed a crime, he has to know that his poor decisions are going to cost him future opportunity, and you can show him how your good decisions have created good future opportunities. If there is a problem, you get an opportunity to talk to a child, and a child opens up to you in regard to a problem at home, you have to be able to help that child understand that there were problems in your house. There are problems in all of our houses. A lot of times kids think that you've made it because you're different or you're more special than them, and you didn't have problems growing up. And I think showing a child how to handle adversity and being a real person is the best way to help a child. It may take him longer, but it's way better than sugarcoating it and making him think that it's going to happen some other kind of way.
Terry. Bob, I just want to quickly say one of the things you do is confront the challenge that you just put before us. Let a kid know, yes, I am old, I am white, and I am wealthy, but I'm here for you. put it out there in front. Mm-hmm. So that way they're not saying it to you. You're recognizing the difference and you're telling them the difference. But yet I am all these things, but yet I am here for you. That right there is going to get through to a young person.
Hey, Bob, thank you very much for the call. We got a call from Carlton. He wanted to know if you could talk about any positive changes, anything good going on that you see in the community.
I think there's a lot of things taking place in the community that are very uplifting. You know, the work that Ozzy does, you know, on a regular basis there in Avondale is a shining example of that. You know, respectively, we all work in, with Terry working with the United Way and myself down at the Freedom Center. We respectively constantly are before the community. We're engaged with the community and we're trying to uplift the community in our respective ways. I would like to think that, you know, collectively we are examples of that progress and of the good work that is being done. And we share that with many people right here in Cincinnati.
There's so many good things that are happening in the city, and they're happening at all levels. They're happening for all kinds of people. Things like, you know, the work that Iris Rowley does and the work that you find in Jeff Pastor. These people that I see that are giving all of their heart and soul to the community so that the community, there's a young kid at UC, DeVoe Sherman. Mm-hmm. You know, these people that are popping up in my mind and the work that they're doing is so fascinating. The sisters down in
OTR. Christina Brown with.
Christina Brown. Yes. She's fabulous. The sisters down in OTR with Sweet Sister Splash. Mm-hmm. Work they're doing. Yes. Daphne Thomas, the work they're doing. It's so much positive stuff. Junior Charm School. It's like amazing the amount of positive things that are going on. I'm so thankful for that question.
And I would definitely say, being with United Way, we had an opportunity to do some speed mentoring at Hughes High School. And I would tell you that there are some bright students in that school. They're very respectful. Had an opportunity. I'm a product of Withrow High School myself, and I'm part of a group. We started doing some tailgating to get some of the alumni to come back to the school, and we were going to the football games. Not a problem. Those young students were, they were just a joy to be around. So a lot of times, like always, the negative is going to get all the attention. But no, there's plenty of brightness that's out here. We just need to bring that brightness out more. And so that way, you know, the people who don't get to see it day to day, they can understand it's there so they can reach for it.
Chris, wrap us up here by telling us about the Solution Symposium that's coming up on Thursday, February 4th.
Absolutely. So on Thursday at 7 p.m., we will have a Solution Symposium. And I emphasize solutions, plural, because there are multiple answers to the problem. And so we have an illustrious panel that will be moderated by James Pilcher with Cincinnati Inquirer. He's an investigative reporter. And matter of fact, some of the information that he was able to collect over the years is actually encased in the exhibit of Ken Killing Ken. And so we want people to come out. It's free and open to the public. If you want to know more information about it, you can visit our website, which is freedomcenter.org. We are requesting RSVPs, but it's not required for those who are reluctant to RSVP. But we want the community to come out with the mindset of talking about solutions. We will reflect on the problem briefly, but we want to move forward our discussion into action.
Ozzy, Terry, and Chris, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
Well, thank you.
Avondale Comprehensive Development Corporation Executive Director and President of Ozzy Davis & Associates, Ozzy Davis III, Director of the United Way of Greater Cincinnati Middletown Area, Terrence Shearer Sr., and Manager of Program Initiatives at the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center, Chris Miller. Coming up, we'll hear about Cincinnati Connects, a plan to create a 42-mile bike trail loop through Cincinnati's neighborhoods. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.